chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got the started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening, and welcome to Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, farming, and Mardi Gras. We're going to do a little bit of that tonight. Hi there, it's Michelle Anna Jordan live in the studio. Haven't been here for a couple of weeks, in part because I was in the South. I was in New Orleans and Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and then paid my dues to New Orleans by getting a really badly sprained ankle. And I'll give you some advice. If you can avoid flying with a brand new sprained ankle, I really recommend that you do that, because, you know, when pressure is, when we're in a situation with less pressure, parts of our bodies can swell. Like, you know, if you take your cowboy boots off on a plane, you might not get them back on till a while after you land. And so coming back a few days after I'd sprained my ankle so badly, coming back caused my foot to swell. And it was impossible. I spent like 10 days in bed. It took a good 5 days for the swelling to go back down to normal. And only complete bed rest did it. So you heard some sort of archive last week. And thanks very much to our music director, Sean Knight, for taking care of that. Really appreciate it. Our guest this evening is returning for at least the third time, probably more like the fourth or fifth. It is my friend Robert Korek, and I'll tell you what he's going to talk about in a few minutes. I just wanted to say a couple of things about Mardi Gras. The music tonight is going to be all New Orleans music from a fabulous compilation of 62 songs, New Orleans blues. And I grew up in the North Bay, and I'm always so surprised when I hear some of this New Orleans blues that it was the music of my childhood. I didn't know it then, but it's just so familiar. And that's part of what makes me love New Orleans so much. But it's just such a happy place to be. Or maybe joyful is the right way to say it. People are so open and so friendly. And there's music on practically every other street corner. And the food, especially the closer to the earth food, not necessarily the fancy restaurants, they're good, but the really earthy food of the people, we shall call it, is just fabulous. So I only spent, oh gosh, a little over 48 hours or so in New Orleans. I saw two Mardi Gras parades, Crew de Vue, followed by Crew Delusion. ate as much as I could possibly eat in that short period of time. You know, all with a very badly sprained ankle, but I figure, you know, adrenaline counts for a lot. And I had a great time. I'll suffer now. And one thing some people don't know, if you don't pay a lot of attention to Mardi Gras, you just think, oh, Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, it's coming up. Let's have a great time. Carnival season in New Orleans actually starts on Epiphany, January 6th, with the first of the parades. And then parades continue sometimes on weekdays, always on weekends, sometimes several at one time, until Fat Tuesday. And, you know, that comes just before Lent, of course, when you are supposed to give up something until Easter. But so there's Mardi Gras season, more than just the day of Mardi Gras, and it's a wonderful time. I think that a lot of local people don't necessarily go out on Mardi Gras Day itself because it's so crazy crowded, and that's when lots of the tourists are out. But even then, if you go to the right place and pretty much avoid Bourbon Street unless you really like hanging out with really, really drunk college students. you can have fun pretty much anywhere in New Orleans. And I think that kind of applies year-round as well. I really am in love with that city more so than ever. There's some things that you can do here in Sonoma County. If you like to just cook and have fun at home, check out my column that ran in the Press Democrat this Wednesday. Both the recipe in the pairing column, it was a Cabernet, and I did sort of an unusual pairing with a New Orleans dish based on chicken with a fabulous butter sauce that really goes remarkably well with Cabernet. But my main column had three Cajun recipes as well. So you can do something simple. You can check out the Mardi Gras party that we just talked about just before the hour at Lagunitas, or you can get really authentic and go up to Parish Cafe in Healdsburg, where from 4 to 7, they think it's the fourth year? No, that's the Lagunitas one. I know they did this last year, and they might have done it the year before. Parish Cafe, Rob, I asked him to be on tonight, and he's, of course, really busy, so we'll get him on sometime soon. But he has what I think is the most authentic New Orleans food. He is from Louisiana near New Orleans, and he's a fabulous chef. Their beignets taste like beignets should. He has great gumbo. You can get a pretty darn authentic muffaletta there, as good as you're going to find this side of New Orleans. And I did bring back two full-size muffalettas from Central Grocery, you know, almost across the street from Café du Monde, where I had my beignets and café au lait just before I got on the plane. But you can get beignets, café au lait, muffaletta, gumbo, shrimp and grits, po' boys, and so much other great food. They don't have their regular menu for their Mardi Gras celebration, but there's definitely food and good times. You can also check out Sweet Teas on Stagecoach, next door to what was, up until 2011, Traverso's. Sweet Teas is doing quite well, have some great smoked meats, and they have a good time. They almost always have music several nights a week. So Sweet Teas in North Santa Rosa and Parish Cafe are two great possibilities if you want to go out and have some fun on a Fat Tuesday, which is coming up this week a little bit late, at least to me a little bit late. Is Easter going to be late this year? Do you know when the Easter is?
I thought it was the third Sunday.
Well, it changes every, you know. We're going to look. We'll let you know. I never know when Easter is.
Yeah, I looked up the other day, but I'm not religious, so I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm not either. It's just, but, you know, I could get a certain kind of religion down in New Orleans, but it's probably not the one most people talk about when they use that term. Anyway, it's a nice season. I'm even thinking about giving up something for Lent.
Oh, my.
Just because it's just sort of interesting to deprive yourself of something for a while, knowing that you're going to have it down the road. It's that it's that whole delayed gratification thing,
right,
which once we're adults and can sort of have everything, anything we want, anytime, there's a sort of artificial element in doing delayed gratification, which to me is what Lent is about.
Okay, well, I don't have the discipline.
I don't know if I do either. I did it actually 2 years ago. I gave up all wheat.
Wow.
Just everybody was talking about gluten-free.
Right,
I said, oh, why? So I just decided to see what it would be like.
And how'd it go?
I did it.
Well, and you notice any changes?
Not really.
No.
No. I probably thought about pasta a little bit more than I usually think about pasta. But no, I didn't really notice any. I didn't notice any change more significant than any time you limit yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think any time you change your diet consciously and decide, I'm going to eat this or I'm not going to eat that, there's just a change because you're paying more attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't notice anything other than that.
Oh, okay. I have this dreadful thinking that I might be allergic to cornmeal.
Oh, dear.
I love corn. And I
grits.
Yeah.
Polenta.
Polenta. Yeah. So
and what's making you think that?
I get all a little bit stuffy, but I get a headache almost. It's sort of like being a little bit stoned, a little bit fatigued. But I'm still checking it out. There's a granola, a gluten-free granola from Trader Joe's that's based, has a cornmeal base to it. And I love it because it's very crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat some and I start to get a little strange in the head, but I still eat it. I don't care.
There you go. Yeah, that's like me. I went out dancing the night after I sprained my ankle after the parades. They told me on Friday night at the urgent care center, no, it's not broken. Give me a brace, all that. But they said, in the first 48 hours, you have to stay off it completely.
Oh,
I was like,
no,
I'm in
dancing.
New Orleans. Are you crazy? I'll stay off it when I get back to California. And I did.
Good.
But yeah, so that's good. So that's interesting. But you know, it might be some other ingredient in there.
It could be, but they say that you crave certain things. You crave, you might be allergic to, and in the summer.
That sounds puritanical to me.
Yeah, right. It could be. Yeah, but corn and the corn cobs.
Yeah. Do you have the same reaction with corn on the cob?
No, but I don't. But I like it a lot.
But so. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Things you crave, you might be allergic to. That just is to me like if it tastes good, it's bad for you. You know, and I just don't buy that at all.
Well, I don't know the source of the theory, but I heard it in passing.
Well, I'll tell you, I have a fabulous acupuncturist. She's been on the show before, and she practices both acupuncture and also is very knowledgeable about the Chinese principles of nutrition.
Oh, okay.
And with all of her clients, she'll spend 30 minutes talking to you before treatment, and she talks to you about your diet, just what you eat. And she says, I always believe you should follow your cravings.
Oh.
So there's,
I need to meet her then.
Yeah. She's
need permission.
she will give it to you. And, you know, it's really, I won't say so much helped me, but maybe reduced my guilt and my curiosity a bit. This was since I've been seeing her, and she's very, very, very good. This one winter, I think it was last winter, the winter before, I was suddenly craving maple syrup.
Oh.
I mean, craving. I would get out of bed and drink maple, go into the refrigerator and drink maple syrup in the middle of the night.
Oh, my. That's a craving.
And I don't really care much for sweets. And I went through two small bottles in about 10 days.
That's an expensive habit you got there.
And then it went away.
Huh.
And then it was gone. And I took a little sip the other night. I was like, wow, I can't believe I did that. Because it was completely gone and it wasn't pleasurable.
Huh.
And just found it interesting. And I told her about it and she said, you know, I always feel you should follow cravings like that. Listen to your body and, you know, because I don't need, you know, I have a pretty good diet. I'm not somebody who's going to sit down and eat a pint of ice cream or a quart of ice cream because I'm, you know, depressed or something.
Right.
So I just found it really interesting. So that craving, you should explore your craving for corn.
Yes.
But not feel guilty about it.
Right. But cornbread is one of my favorite things.
And I know you like my polenta.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay. Enough chit chat. That's not why we're here.
Right.
You are doing, I think, at the Seed Bank tomorrow
night? Seed Bank Wednesday night.
Oh, Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Oh, March 1st?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So, and the seed bank is in Petaluma on the corner of Washington, Petaluma Boulevard, south.
Right. North.
North.
North. Petaluma Boulevard North, they call it there for some reason. It's right at the
end of the change. Exactly.
Right.
So big, beautiful building. And is there a cost?
No, it's free.
Yeah, those things are usually free.
Yeah, I've been doing events. I've been doing talks second Wednesday of every month for about 6 months.
Oh, really?
And it'll keep going on for another 4 or 5.
Oh, cool. I'd love to do some there sometime. We'll have to talk.
Yeah.
I've done a couple things there, but it's been quite a while. So this is on something I didn't know was part of your area. Mushrooms.
Yes.
Tell us.
Well, it's specifically, fancy word for it is mycorrhizal association.
Mycorrhizal.
M-Y-C-O, and then I think it's...
Mycorrhizal.
Yeah. Okay. I can't spell it off the top of my head. I have to use
hand. You have a pen, of course.
But it's a beneficial fungus, a fungi, that makes plants grow better. And 80-90% of all plants in the world need it to grow healthy.
And do most have it?
Yeah, most have it, and like most gardens have plenty of it.
I'm curious, because I know nothing about this. Uh-huh. But you know sometimes if you're working in your garden and you dig down just a little bit, there'll be this white. Right,
that's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay, yeah. I've seen that. I've always, it's like, oh, this looks like something to do with mushrooms, but they never
smaller.
Grow.
They taper down as things you can't see.
Okay, and it looks like when you first find it, it looks like lace that started to decompose.
Yeah.
Okay.
But these beneficial fungi have a symbiotic relationship with roots. It's not parasitic. The fungus goes, there's two types. One goes into the cells of the roots, and the other one goes between the cells, and they pump a lot of stuff. Phosphorus is a lot of what they pump. Mm-hmm. Into the roots, and trees themselves in the forest can't live without it because they're not very efficient at getting phosphorus. So when the forestry service was growing trees for transplants to reforest burned out area or logged area, whatever, they grew it in sterile medium and in the greenhouse, and they go and transplant them in the forest, and things didn't do so well. Well, then they finally realized they needed that mycorrhizae in the soil, in the growing grounds, and they did it, and the seedlings will grow 2 to 5 times higher, and then the transplant is even better than without it. So it's quite remarkable. When many trees have this beneficial fungus, and it increases the surface area of their root system up to 1,000%, because you've got the mycelium migrating all over through the soil, way beyond the root system of the tree.
So are the roots then following after it?
No. It's more of the mycelium that comes to the root.
Oh, okay.
There's called endo and ecto mycorrhizae. The endo is the one that goes inside the cell itself and pumps nutrients, micronutrients, and moisture and nitrogen, but a high amount of phosphorus. The other one, the ecto, goes between the cells, and it's absorbed by the cells, but the... that's the one that makes the mushrooms. The endo happens all below ground, never sends a mushroom up. But the ecto sends up these mushrooms. So like Amanita, the death cap, indicates you've got this fungus in the soil.
Oh, so that fungus, the one that looks like decomposing lace, that will send up Amanitas?
Some, you know.
Send up different kinds.
Right. There'll be Boletus is another one. Mm-hmm. Boletus is the mushroom that has kind of a slimy top, and when you turn it over, it looks like foam rubber, and it's considered edible. Mm-hmm. I've eaten it and gotten dreadfully sick.
Really?
My friends didn't, but so it depends on person to person. But anyway, so that these beneficial fungi make these mushrooms, and the spores go out and make more mushrooms, and it inoculates more area.
Now, is shaggy mane one of them? Because
don't know. I have a list in one of my books, but I don't have it all on the top of my head.
Because shaggy mane, I think you see where oak trees are growing.
Well, a lot of these show up with pines.
Pines.
Uh-huh. But anyway, so the beneficial fungi feed all this stuff to the tree. But the tree gives up to 10% of its carbohydrates, its sugars, to the fungus. And because the fungus is pumping all this great stuff into the roots, it's a net gain for the tree. So the fungus is living off the tree, but it's not a parasitic.
But it's not parasitic.
Yeah. So that's fascinating way that forests manifest things we never realized. Now it's becoming very popular in gardening to talk about mycorrhizal, and what's interesting is more and more garden shops are selling what's called a mycorrhizal inoculant. And the talk on Wednesday night is about whether or not you even need that. Because some of that stuff is $60 a pound.
I was going to ask you if it's in when you buy garden soil or something. Is it in it?
You'd have to look on the bag. If it doesn't say mycorrhizae on the bag, it doesn't have it.
Okay.
But if you buy a normal bag of topsoil or a potting soil, it doesn't have it, and okay. It can be a problem.
Uh-huh.
You won't get as good a growth as as if you had the mycorrhizae in the potting soil. You can plant that plant from, quote, sterile. A lot of plants in the nursery come in this so-called sterile planting mix. It's mm-hmm. just it doesn't have even any soil in it. It's compounds of sawdust and what have you. You put that in the ground, the mycorrhizae that's there colonizes uh-huh. the roots, so it gets inoculated by what's there. So most gardens have it. They have a wide range of different types. It comes in dozens of genus and species of things.
Oh, really? Okay, so it's not all the same.
Not all the same. It's very diversified. In fact, if you're going to get inoculant, you want to look on the back of the label and make sure it has dozens of different genus and species of things you don't mm-hmm. recognize. But that gives you a broad spectrum. But here's the interesting point. If you buy the inoculant in the store and put it in your garden soil and you have mycorrhizae already, they start duking it out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're territorial. And you don't know which one's taking the abuse the most. So my feeling is, why buy the inoculant at $60 a pound sometimes mm-hmm. and put it in the soil when you probably have it already?
Yeah.
If you see these mushrooms, 100% sure that you have it.
Yeah.
The place where mushrooms don't show up as sterile soil, but subsoil, when they build a house and they dig down to the clay and push all the topsoil away, mm-hmm. then that could be very useful to put an inoculant there.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy soil that's out at the beach with salt, that's not a very healthy environment until you inoculate it.
Mm-hmm.
Tailings from toxic dumps.
Tailings?
Tailings are like when you do a dig up copper in the ground.
Oh.
All the stuff that's not copper gets dumped in a great big pile, and it's sterile because it comes from the below ground and it's got lots of heavy metals in it and what have you. So if you have that in your backyard, you need
you need to inoculate.
Yeah, or move.
Okay. On that note, I think we should let what he just said sink in a little bit with a bit of a soundtrack to go with it.
Old-fashioned loving when I'm gone. Who gonna do your old kind loving from now? Well, I got a little girl about 95 pounds. I want my baby, she right on time. Baby, sweet jelly rolling, baby, sweet jelly rolling. Mama, sweet jelly rolling right now. When you want my baby, you better take your time. Baby, sweet jelly rolling, baby, sweet jelly rolling, baby, sweet jelly rolling right now. Yo, who gonna do your old-fashioned loving from now on? Who gonna do your old kind loving from now? Well, I got a little girl about 95 pounds, and I want that little woman, she right on time. Sweet jelly rolling, baby, sweet jelly rolling, baby, sweet jelly rolling right now, yeah.
She right on time. Baby, sweet jelly rolling. Baby, sweet jelly rolling. Mama, sweet jelly rolling at night.
Okay, Anthony, I'm going to ask you to tell us who that was. Can you do that?
Yeah.
Can you grab it real quick? Mouthful's fabulous new engineer, Anthony, and I don't even know your last name.
Anthony Garcia.
Garcia.
That was right. Sweet Jelly Roll by Jesse Hill.
Oh, that was Jesse Hill. Wow. And you just chose that because I asked you to choose something. And the next song we're going to hear is also going to be by Jesse Hill. And I think anyone listening to Mouthful will recognize it. But we're going to talk a bit more. This is fascinating.
And there's still some more places where you can use it. But
use
the inoculant.
The mica.
The stuff that you buy.
Right.
If the ground has been heavily drenched with fungicides, obviously.
Okay.
It needs the inoculant.
What about with all of the rain we've had this year? Is that good for it, or does it wash it away?
I don't think it washes it away.
Okay.
Just like the mushrooms are going to come up.
Okay.
They're pretty well established.
Because I've just noticed.
Right. I went out after the rains and was digging around, and sure enough, I found the white. Mm-hmm. Lacy stuff after a heavy rain.
So. Cool.
But it shows up more in wood chips. A lot of people, they bring in wood chips, and all of a sudden mushrooms just start popping up everywhere. And part of it has to do with bringing in the wood chips that are inoculated, but also it's a good environment for the mycelium, so the mushrooms thrive as well.
What about grab-and-grow cells mushroom compost?
That's mushroom compost based on the cultivation of the mushrooms.
Okay, so it's
eat.
The sawdust.
Yeah.
It's the recycled
stuff.
Sawdust and
right.
things. Okay.
Right. It's left over after they've done the mushrooms and
okay.
they push it out of the mushroom house, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that happen at Gourmet Mushrooms. They're getting ready to take it.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then if you do Roundup, Roundup's really bad for the
you
mycelium.
Mean poison?
Yeah, the Roundup, herbicide.
That's not illegal yet?
No, it's not at all. It's started to be, I think, the state of California has decided to list it as a certified carcinogen.
Oh, that's right. That's what it was.
Yeah, but they're never going to get rid of it because Monsanto is too big of a player. It's just horrible.
Yeah. I see people standing in their driveway.
Right.
And I know
right.
that's what they're spraying. It's like, doesn't it take less time to go pull those few weeds in the cracks of your driveway?
Well, they can be tough in the cracks of the driveway, but people don't wear protective clothing. I mean, this stuff is dangerous when you spray it. It's not so bad in the soil. It actually gets bound up in clay and doesn't migrate much.
Oh.
But it's when you're out there spraying, you get it on your shoes, you get it on your pants. I mean, and you go home to
you breathe it.
Take your shoelaces off. Yeah, and you breathe it. So you have to use a very special application tool that the homeowners don't usually have, and you have to wear. I wear, if I'm going to do any spraying, I don't use Roundup, but I wear rubber boots that come up halfway up my leg.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see that with the general public.
Oh no, you don't.
I've only seen once. I think only once a guy in a white suit doing Roundup.
I've seen that, but it's been city workers,
right?
You know, on the divides, in,
right?
In streets.
Right. I've only seen it once with a landscape company. Yeah. So anyway, so that there's a lot of places where you could use it, but most gardeners don't have these problems. So it's probably there. So it's taken care of by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a nice thing to know that. But there's a bunch of things you can do to further it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you don't want to do is compress it, stepping on it. Breaks the fiber or the mycelium shoot or strands.
Mm-hmm.
So permanent pathways in your garden are very important.
Mm-hmm.
Whether just the same place you walk all the time on the soil or a brick pathway, either one, but not just walking all over the place.
Right.
So you can't use your stiletto heels in the garden.
Don't worry.
You have to cut that out.
Well, I can't fit into any shoes, right? I can only wear ballet slippers right now, so no high heels for me for a bit. I want to ask you a question, And I don't... I've only read a tiny bit about this, so I could be in way left field. But I've read a couple of articles recently, and I'm not sure if one was in one of your books or not, about how trees talk to each other.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Because
is that, well, my question is one of the ways that they communicate through this?
It's done through the mycelium.
God, that's awesome. Yeah. I can figure it out.
And what's remarkable, just short story, is the mycelium can go from plant to plant, but they can connect with each other. So that one mycelium from one plant can be bind up, so to speak, with another mycelium, mm-hmm. or one mycelium will connect with another tree. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman in Canada, I think her last name is Stames, and she's been researching this for 30 years. And I have a drawing on my computer that shows that she did research. One tree was connected to 43 other trees and shrubs via the mycelium and talking to each other. And so they're transferring nutrients, and uh-huh. and the mycelium are very helpful in drought resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So they do pass moisture.
Mm-hmm.
So they can help trees. But when one tree, like in my current book, Understanding Roots, I talk about fava beans, but it happens with trees. Fava beans get aphids. A fava bean right here gets an aphid, and it creates a chemical signal that goes through the mycelium to the other fava beans saying, uh-oh, I've got aphids. And they start producing chemicals that aphids don't like. So little alkaloids and mm-hmm. tannins and all kinds of little things that insects don't like to eat. So the trees do the same thing. That one tree gets damaged, it starts to pass on the signal to another tree that is getting infested with such and such an insect. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it doesn't stop everything. I mean, there's sure. still trees dying. But the point is, when you think about the mycelium going from one tree to another, mycelium going to one mycelium to another mycelium, one tree being connected to 45, 43 other trees, it's all one forest.
Yeah. If this doesn't make you happy,
right.
there's something wrong. I just love this. I love this. And it's made me just that little bit. And it must have been from your Roots book.
Yeah, the first one didn't cover it. But Understanding Roots, my second book, has a chapter on my mycorrhizal association. I end the chapter with just a touch of this phenomenon.
It's made forests and even patches of trees look different to me
yeah.
when I look at them. I, you know, it's added this layer that they talk to each other. And when one gets sick, they all know it and they help that one out, right? By
right.
sending nutrients that
well,
they need.
And a dying trees will pass nutrients on to the living trees as mm-hmm. they die, so that they're helping support mm-hmm. the healthy trees nearby as they're dying. So if you want to get more of this, that I think it's Stames from Canada. She's on one of those TED Talks.
Oh.
I don't know how you search it, but I think you might be able to search it by mycorrhizae or by her name.
Stames.
Stemmons. I can't remember her first name right now.
Stemmons.
But she has a fantastic TED Talk. And she's not just making this stuff up. She's been studying it for 30 years. Like, we had that book back in the 60s or 70s. What was it was on, you know, play music for plants that grow better.
Right, yeah.
That book.
Talk to your
right,
plants.
Right.
Everybody's, you know, everybody for a time was talking to their indoor plants.
Right, exactly. I can't think of the name of the book, but this is like a complete scientifically based, mm-hmm. highly studied. It's only just being discovered by gardeners, but this woman has been doing the research for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more and more of the industry, so to speak, researching it. So there's more and more information all the time. And there are several books out now on the topic, the whole book dedicated to this type of phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't yet gotten it. It just came out. So I don't know what the book quality is like. Okay. But it's a fascinating phenomenon.
Okay, I have so many questions, but let's take one more musical break here. Because, you know, we have to celebrate Mardi Gras just a little bit. So we're going to hear from Jesse Hill again.
Yeah! Oh, yeah!
Oh, God, I love Jesse Hill. Oop-oop-a-doo. Does that remind you of your childhood? It sure reminds me of mine. And you recognized it.
I recognized it, but in Missouri, we didn't.
Is that where you grew up?
I grew up in St. Louis, yeah.
Oh, you did?
A very conventional family. Uh-huh. So we didn't have any of this kind of music.
you weren't a kid under the covers with a transistor radio like I was?
No, not me. I was very conventional. But I only got interested in music in middle of high school. The first record I ever bought was The Band.
Oh, wow.
So I enjoyed that.
Yeah. But, I had a different experience just because I had a much older half-sister.
Okay.
So she was already into, you know, music by the time I could listen to any, you know.
Yeah.
I actually, when I was 5 years old, she said she was big. She was husky. She would sit on me and hold my shoulders down on the bed while she turned up rock and roll and blasted it.
I didn't have that.
So, you know, I imprinted on it in a very visceral way. Okay, anyway, this is so exciting. I love this. I loved your book on roots. I love knowing that there's so much more there than what we see with our own eyes. And so I love that you look at a tree and you realize it's just this vast system underground. And now with this mycelium, it's even more exciting.
Yeah, they cohabit. So the general guideline for tree roots is they prefer to have as much as 50% or more of the roots in the top 12 inches, 12 to 18 inches. They don't have, less than 2% of all trees have a taproot. People think, oh, they got a taproot, it keeps the tree from falling over, blah, blah, blah. In reality, the roots grow much wider than the foliage, mm-hmm. and they stay in the upper soils. In fact, the top 4 inches can be more important than 12 inches down. Because
it's spreading out so far.
Spreading sideways, and they like the aerobic environment. That's the more healthy the aerobic environment is, the more roots you have.
Now, what helps create the aerobic environment? Do earthworms do a lot of
that? Yeah, earthworms, bacteria, uh-huh. The pore space that's developed by lots of soil life and earthworms, and so the air can go in and out. Uh-huh. The way I talk about it is you've got bacteria and beneficial things in the soil, but they got to fart. And if they're going to fart, where's that toxic stuff going to go? Uh-huh. It goes through the pore space and goes out into space. Oh. Meanwhile, the nitrogen and oxygen
come in.
Yeah. And so that's how you get nitrogen fixation. The gas comes into the ground, and the certain plants will colonize, so to speak. They'll absorb that nitrogen into the roots and create more nitrogen than other plants.
Uh-huh.
But the root system can be incredibly detailed and precious, so to speak, in the top 4 inches. Mm-hmm. And so can the mycelium. So there's a drawing in my book, a graph, that shows the top 4 inches of the soil has far more of the mycelium than the next 4 inches. So that's where compression is a real problem, walking through the forest.
So you really want to take care of that top
four
soil.
Inches. So that's where deep mulch or permanent pathways.
Uh-huh. Both, it sounds like, maybe.
Yeah.
Deep mulch and permanent pathways.
Yeah, yeah. So the old idea of raised beds, when we used to do them in the old days without wooden sides, we improved the soil and they'd be mounted up. We always had permanent pathways and not step on the raised bed.
Right, yeah. I have three or four raised beds.
Yeah.
And never step in the raised
good,
bed.
Good,
never, ever.
Good for you.
But I think mine needs some help anyway. I haven't been, you know, my goal is to garden this year.
Oh, good.
There were a couple of years when I couldn't quite do it. How do home gardeners take this knowledge other than don't compress your soil, make permanent pathways? But at this time of year, when we're seeing the first, you know, whispers of spring, you know, trees have buds on them now.
Right, right.
Lots and lots of little buds on my five quince trees, but we've got blossoms on some. What should people be doing now to enhance this health?
Not digging the soil. What happens is if people get this spring urge, they start going out there come March or April, whatever, and they start digging, and they start take a shovel and they plop it upside down. So they stick the shovel mm-hmm. in, rotate it, turn it upside down. Well, that puts the mycelium 4-8 inches deeper where it doesn't want to be. Uh-huh. So you're interfering with the mycelium by cultivation.
Now, is this one of the primary reasons that so many farmers want to to not cultivate?
Yeah, there's a growing trend called no-till.
No-till, that's what I was
and
thinking
it can, it's spreading into agriculture, but home gardeners can do it quite easily. But no-till, if done properly, can produce more yields than tillage.
And it, is it because of this breaking up of the miscellaneous
Well, part of that
till?
And part of the beneficial critters in the soil, bacteria and blue-green algae and things called actinomycetes and all these other things, like the aerobic environment. So if you take a shovel full of stuff and turn it over, you're taking the aerobic-loving bacteria, putting them 8 inches down, they start to die or go into suspended animation because it's not have the air down there if they like. And the same thing is the air, the critters that live down 8 inches down don't like the amount of air when you turn it over and they're up near the surface, so they start to oxidize. They literally start to burn up, but not flames, but they oxidize.
So
they don't like it. So then it takes a while for all that stuff to repopulate where it wants to be.
So one of the really great side benefits of this is you don't have to look out at your garden and beat yourself up for not going out and turning all the dirt over.
Right, right.
That's so valuable
and doing
in
it
and
now,
of itself.
Doing it now with the soil so wet, it's just going to muck up the clay and make the clay much worse. So that the problem being that people buy these bare root trees and they're starting to even begin to leaf out in the whole, in the retail nurseries. And they come home and they, what am I going to do? The ground is wet and there's almost standing water in some places. And so you can't plant. The problem being that when you take a shovel and put it in the ground, the back of the shovel slicks the soil. So it becomes like a little clay pot. If you're digging a hole to plant a tree.
Is there a better way to make the hole?
If you're going
to
plant in a hole, you do it with a spading fork. It's a heavy-duty fork that has tines half an inch thick, not like a pitchfork. And that way you can break up the soil with the and not create that slick back. Now, if you use a shovel and dig a hole with that, you need to take the spading fork and puncture the sides of the hole and fracture it so that the roots can get through that. And then I tell people to stick the spading fork at the bottom of the hole and rock it back and forth to fracture the bottom of the hole.
I think that's good advice. A lot of people are going to be planting, I think.
Well, let me explain the other.
Okay,
the best way to go is to be a really good gardener and plan in advance. And it's very difficult. I have a hard time doing it. But basically, you should build your planting mounds or planting areas in September so that you have the soil in good shape. And I like to plant on mounds so that it drains in the winter. But the point being, you do the soil prep. Like, you can water the soil in September and wait for it to dry to the right level to work it. Do that in September, and then all you have to do this time of year is take a spading fork and create a hole, not a hole, but spread it out and stick the roots in, close it up, so you don't have to do cultivation this time of year. But you got to plan in advance. That's quite a bit of advanced planning.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of people have lost a lot of trees this year.
Yeah. Yep.
What sort of advice do you have for people who might want to replace some of their trees?
Well, if you want to replace the trees that have blown over have been pretty large.
Yes.
And if you look at them, they have no tap roots. They don't have a big on root sticking out below the trunk. They have these splayed out root systems. So the root system in a heavy clay soil will be half again as wide as the foliage. In a sandy soil like you get in Sevastopol, 3 to 5 times wider than the foliage. It's the width of the root system that acts sort of like a tripod that keeps the tree from falling over. But when you've got a ground that's totally saturated and it can, there's just a mechanical problem with the roots holding on to the soil.
Yeah, that's what happened a lot in Sevastopol
with these big trees.
This year.
And so if you have a tree that blew over in a place that you really love, you need to get a chipper in there and grind up a stump grinder and grind up the stump in place to try to get it to rot down faster. Otherwise, it'll take decades for the stump to rot down to where you could do something. So if you get a stump grinder in there, it just shreds the daylight, so the stump down to 10, 12, 20 inches.
And is that something you rent?
Yeah, this, well, I don't know if you rent it. I wouldn't. I would get a service because they're
service.
Yeah,
okay.
The tree people can do it, and this because it's a heavy duty, dangerous machine. It's not a lightweight.
So stump grinder. You meant.
Yeah, stump grinder.
Not a thing.
Right. A service. Right.
Okay.
Service.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we did it out in Occidental where I lived. In 3-4 years later, you could have planted almost on top of where the tree was. But what I tell people is to plant in between so that if you got a stump here and another stump 20 feet away, plant halfway between the two.
Yeah.
There'll be less roots to get in the way of cultivation, and you just let the other stuff rot away. It becomes compost. It might take 20 years, but it'll be compost.
Interesting. We don't have that much time left.
Oh, my.
So I want to go back to your talk.
Okay.
I want to go back to not just the talk that's coming up on Wednesday, but you said
6 o'clock.
What, all these details? 6 p.m.? 6 until when?
Till, well, 7:30. It says, on their website, it says 8, but I usually, that's too long for most people, so I try to do it till 7:30. This particular slideshow is...
you have a slideshow with
it. I have to cram it in first, an hour and a half. I have to really cram all the information in. So it's very dense, but it's very fascinating. So, and I'm a funny guy sometimes.
Yes, you are. So it's 6 o'clock. It is on the corner of Washington.
They call it North Petaluma, but it's that main intersection.
It's the old bank building.
Right, the huge old bank building.
Yeah, and fairly easy parking. Not too bad.
Yeah, it's tough, but you can go around the corner to that street that's one way.
Kentucky.
Yeah.
But you can also park where you see the Exchange Bank. That's the Golden Eagle Shopping Center,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
Park there and just, you know,
walk.
There you are.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah. So there's places nearby. So it's not too bad. Plus that time of day, there a lot of people gone home.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I can almost always get one on Kentucky.
And then... what books of yours will be for sale that night?
Well, they've messed up big time.
Oh, no.
And all these talks I've given, they haven't had my books there for sale. The person that coordinates this now is not as organized as the previous woman that took care of it. I'm going to have to talk to her. And now that you mention it, I'm going to call her up tomorrow and say, listen, get some of my books out there. If they don't have them, I'll just sell them to them.
Right. Yeah. Like you can provide them.
I can't provide my books directly to the public there. They have to buy it through the seed bank.
Okay. So,
and technically, they're supposed to get it from my distributor.
Right. Yeah.
But in the past, when things got tough, I just sold them to the wholesale to the seed bank.
Yeah. I've had to do that too. You want people...
Yeah, I make a fraction of the money when I do that, but
something like 78 cents versus $7.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, I figured that out once on some of my books, and it's like so depressing. Why even think about it?
Right, right.
But you're doing this. You say you're going to do it for what? Another 4 months or so?
I think about four more. The second Wednesday of the month, and I don't remember the topics, but there'll be one coming up. Probably around May or June on summer pruning, because so many people don't realize the advantages of summer pruning. Summer pruning is a way to control the tree better, not make what people call water sprouts. And it's also a way to further fruiting. So summer pruning is what I do more of when I'm in a role on taking care of a tree. I do more summer pruning for fruit trees than I do winter pruning.
So what are the advantages? Well,
what happens
a little more.
Okay, in the winter, the basic guideline is pruning in the winter stimulates growth because you cut back and then the flow of sap coming up out of the ground with all this vigor hits the buds below the cut and they just start shooting straight up in the air and make what people call water sprouts.
Oh, okay.
They're not water sprouts, they're just vigorous growth.
Okay.
So that's what happens in the winter. In the summer, you slow down growth. You can control growth. When you cut back in August, it doesn't make those water sprouts.
Ah.
And if you cut back on fruit trees at the right place several times in the summer, you get more fruit the next year, especially with apple and pear trees.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a fruitful way. So I did an article for Permaculture Magazine that just established here in Sonoma County. And I did the current issue has a spring pruning, because that's where public thinks of, oh, you only prune in the spring. The next issue will have my article on summer pruning.
Summer pruning.
Yeah. so people can get it through the Permaculture magazine.
Uh-huh. And for people who, let's talk about your website. What is your website?
It's Robert Couric, one word, no space. And Couric is K-O-U-R-I-K, mm-hmm. no C. Katie Couric spells it wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can buy your books through
there. All my books are, and it's $20 per book, no shipping cost and no tax cost.
Okay.
Equal or better than Amazon. And it's autographed by me, so you can't get the autograph.
Uh-huh.
So that adds another 25 cents value to each book.
There you go. But you also are, in addition to writing magazines, giving talks, writing books, you also are...
I do landscape design, yeah.
Yeah, talk a little bit
about
that. I
don't do the physical work.
you do the design.
Right. My sciatica kicked in too much now to get out there and do a lot of physical work.
Even before I met you, I knew about you because you had done such beautiful work at Preston Winery.
Yeah,
this
was
back
happy.
In the 80s. It was gorgeous.
1980s, and it's still there. You know, the beds are still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very happy. They let it run down some, but the fact that I planted two hedges of lavender in 1980. It was the first lavender planting at a winery in the county.
Oh, even before the one at Matanzas Creek.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It was like 10 years before. So it was only a couple 400 plants.
Mm-hmm. I remember
But it was a little long sloping hedge and stuff. And so I take pride in that because I introduced lavender way before Matanzas Creek.
And one of your books is about lavender.
I did a book for Chronicle Books on lavender.
Yes. And were you the one who planted the white wisteria?
I did it. Preston,
yes.
Because I got a very special type that's had much longer bloom.
Yes. It looked like lace curtains.
That's exactly what I wanted it to look like.
Well, I want that at my house.
Okay,
I
good.
It's
hard
it.
To find. It's very hard to find. And the blankety blanks there had to redo their siding.
Yes.
And they put the purple back on.
Yeah.
There's no white lace curtains anymore.
I bought fairly expensive, quote-unquote, white wisteria from a nursery I won't mention,
right?
That we all know,
and it didn't come out white. I bet
no, it came out
a white, okay, purple, right? So you really have to. It's hard to find, and it's called Longissima.
I've researched. Okay, so that's the variety.
That's the subspecies. So it's what is it? Wisteria japonica or chinensis longissima.
Yeah, and we're gonna. There are I think three or four spots in Sebastopol. They're so gorgeous.
Was it Gene Gaffney or what is the tax guy?
Yeah, that tax guy right on the corner.
When you come from the one-way street and it begins to join the other street on the south side of town, he's got trees.
They've
trained as trees and they're white.
And they're so beautiful. And that's when you want to go out at 6 in the morning and get it right. I think it's late April, early May is when those bloom. And you just want to get it right when the morning sun is hitting it. It's one of my favorite things about Sonoma County. And on that note, we are almost out of time, aren't we, Anthony? We're getting there. So, robertcouric.com. And Wednesday, March 1st at the Seed Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. This has been, I'm so excited.
This whole
mycelium, the conversation with trees. I don't usually listen to my own podcasts, but I'm going to be listening to
this one when
it's posted on Tuesday. And we'll get some good publicity about it out there as well. Get it up on my website and some other websites.
Great.
So thank you. I hope you you bet. And thank you for the ride.
Yeah, no problem.
Really appreciate it. Can't wait until I can get back behind the wheel. I always drive a standard transmission, and it's really hard to use a clutch when you're... left ankle isn't so operative. Okay, have a great week. Meet me back here next Sunday at 6 for another yummy episode of Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming on KRCB FM.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up old family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Why